Actuarial farm.
Yes, well, there was this chap tied up and being held by one of the Chetniks, and we asked the colonel what was going on, and he said, oh, he has told the Bulgars where we are, and we must move on because he's a traitor, and we've got to shoot him. So, after a short time, indeed, this man was taken off into the woods, and we heard a single shot. And the next day, somebody else was wearing the rather nice embroidered waistcoat that he'd been wearing. Christmas came and went, and very soon after Christmas, this courier turned up. And he brought with him a Yugoslav officer who had been trained in the British Army and a Yugoslav radio operator called Dušan Leban. The officer's name was Gaitski, G-A-I-S-K-I, and a radio set. And Dušan Leban could speak quite reasonable English. And he immediately set up his radio and got in touch with the British mission in Serbia. And a few days after that, we received a message, and the message was, hold on, men, we'll give you further instructions later. So we held on, and we wrote a full account of everything that we'd seen from the prison train coming through Greece, all the guards on the tunnels and the minefields and the troops at the stations and the movement of troops which had been spotted. And that was all sent off to Serbia. And then they lapsed into silence. We heard nothing. Ron's leg was better by this time. And come the spring, we wanted to be off.
Was this Chetnik band doing any fighting?
At the time, no, none at all. They were keeping out of the way of the Bulgars, but the Bulgars clearly knew that they were there and went to quite a bit of trouble to get hold of them. They had several purges. They would descend upon a village and search it. And then the next day they'd search another village. Well, all the villagers were in favour of us, you see, and so we were kept well up to date with the movement of the Bulgars. And when we learnt that they had searched in a certain village, one day, the next day, we would go there, knowing full well that they wouldn't search the same place 2 days running. And so we were able to dodge them like that. But
what was the attitude of the local population towards the Bulgarian troops?
Very, very hostile all the time. They tried to do as much as they could to impede them and as much as they could to help us. But they couldn't do very much to help us, and we were very hungry most of the time, especially through the winter. On one occasion, during one of these purges, we had to disappear into the country, and the best place to go, according to the locals, was in the crater of an extinct volcano. And there was a good 3 feet of snow up in this crater, and precious little shelter. So we were faced with spending the time out in the open, and it was pretty chilly. So we lit fires on the snow, and built them up as much as possible while the fire burnt its way through the snow. And when it got to the ground level, then we would keep on feeding the fire until it melted the snow for a reasonable distance all round, and then we would get into the space, and we'd be reasonably well sheltered, completely open to the air, of course, but at least away from the wind, and able to warm ourselves by the fire. This went on for some time. I remember at the end of a number of days there, somebody from the nearest village brought up a sack full of bread, and we were very grateful for this because it was the only thing we'd had to eat for a very long time. And the last crumbs were carefully shaken out of this sack before we finally declared it finished. We were pretty hungry most of the time. Come the spring, there were several things that we could find to eat. There was wild garlic, for instance, and there were wild strawberries. Very often, a sheep or a goat, or on one occasion a bullock, were driven out to feed us. I always remember the slaughtering of this bullock. We couldn't shoot it because of the noise. And so three or four chaps got hold of it, upended it, while another one cut its throat with a knife. Most gory business. But at least it was food. This went on to 9 months altogether. During the spring and summer, we'd made one or two attempts to get out to track down the partisans, because one thing we did have there was a radio, and we could hear the BBC broadcast from London, and we learnt from that the partisans were the only people who were getting any help from the Allies, and so we did our best to convert these Chetniks to thinking about joining the partisans. Until then, you must understand that they were faithful to the king and didn't want anything to do with Tito, who they regarded as a bit of a charlatan. Their general was Mihailovich, and they were hoping for him to lead them back to freedom.
What kind of arguments did you use to convert them?
Simply telling them that we were all working for the same cause, Mihailovich, Tito, the British, the Americans, everybody. It was pointless having any internal strife. But this wasn't helped on one occasion by our meeting a patrol of partisans who opened fire on us, and one of the Chetniks, a chap called Temelko, was killed. In the end, they came round to our way of thinking, and I suppose it must have been August or September of 44, the partisans sent what they described as a brigade, consisted of about 400 men and women, instead of fighting them, our people actually joined up with them. And this was great. They all got together, and somebody produced some bagpipes, and they had a great dance and a celebration.
How many were in your band then?
By then, there must have been 200. It started with a group of about 30, and it increased as time went on.
Where were the recruits coming from?
From all the villages. The Bulgars were pretty vicious, and they would take revenge on any family where they knew there was a member in the woods, in the Chetniks or partisans or whatever. And every day, one or two men would find themselves obliged to run. And when they ran, they joined up with us. Most of them were unarmed, of course. There were a few arms amongst us, because a lot of them had arms hidden in their houses, but most of those who came straight from the village were not armed at all. So that made it a bit tricky, and of course another reason for why the Chetniks tended to keep quiet rather than attacking the Bulgars.
Were the Bulgarians executing people?
Yes. They caught one of our chaps on one occasion, And there were very lurid stories as to what happened to him, and I've no reason to think they weren't true. His fingernails were torn out, and then he was buried alive.
What was his name, do you know?
He was called the Vodnik. I can't remember his name, and unfortunately the diary I kept was later destroyed. So I can't help you there, but he was known as the Vodnik, which I believe is a rank in the Yugoslav army.
How had he come to be captured?
I don't know. I think he was caught out on his own on one occasion, just as we caught the odd Bulgarian from time to time. But they didn't live long either after our chaps had captured them. They were unbelievably primitive. There was one occasion when it was learnt that a man in a certain village was collaborating with the Bulgars, and so our chaps got up a little party to go and visit him, and they wore Bulgar uniforms, because another source of recruits to the Chetniks were deserters from the Bulgar army. They attempted to conscript all conscriptable men into the army, and a lot of them deserted and came to us, and they brought their arms with them. So they made up this little party and called on this collaborator in the village, and they accepted his hospitality, had a meal from him. And when they'd finished their meal, they took him outside, took him to a bridge over the river where they shot him, and they dismembered his body and distributed it all over the bridge. So I spoke to one of the men who'd been on this party, and I said, "How did you get on?" He said, "Oh, I had a great time," and he produced a filthy-looking, dirty rag out of his pocket, which he unfolded, and there were two obscene-looking pieces of gristle in there, and he said, "Look, these are his eyes."
And so the Bulgarian troops that they captured were just shot out of hand, were they?
Yes, yes. They were talked, given a talking to, first of all, to see whether they would possibly make members of our group, but none of them ever did. I remember one particular one who must have been a very brave lad. He stared round him scornfully and said, "Shum karite," which means dwellers in the wood.
But some of them actually did join.
Not Bulgars. These people who did join were Macedonians, Yugoslavs, who had been conscripted into the Bulgar army.
Mm. But the actual Bulgarians wouldn't join.
No, that's right. Mm.
And so do I understand that there was never any attempt to do any fighting?
That's right.
By the Chetniks?
That's right. No attempt at all there. We heard stories from Serbia in the north where the Chetniks had been fighting the partisans, and this was really another strength, added strength to our arguments, you see. We were able to point out how stupid this was, Yugoslav fighting Yugoslav, when the common enemy was the Germans and the Italians.
So going back to the Bulgarian who had said "Shum karite," he was just then shot, was he?
Yes, yes.
What happened to you next, after the unity with the partisans?
Yes. Only a few days after that, we met up with a British mission to the partisans. It consisted of two men. A chap called Captain Miller, Hugh Desmond Thomas Miller, and his radio operator, Tom Smith. We explained our situation to him, and he was very properly sceptical and made us repeat the story several times before he accepted us. But he then reported our presence through his radio to the headquarters of the British missions, which I think at that time was in Bari in Italy. The message never got through to my parents, I'm afraid, but it did get through to Ron Hill's parents. I was still missing for quite a long time. Having been accepted, we then became official members of the British mission. Not that we did very much, but it was quite useful when we were receiving drops of supplies, which was the main purpose of the mission. If Captain Miller and Tom Smith had to be in one part of the country, they could leave us in another part, and we could receive the drops. So I suppose we did perform a reasonable sort of a function. And then came the time when the Germans started evacuating the Balkans, and on one occasion the Germans wanted to arrange a safe passage through, and there was a conference between the local German commander and Captain Miller, and by then we'd been joined by a couple of Americans, a chap called Dickinson, Major Dickinson. The code name of his mission was Spike. The code name of Miller's mission was Bethesda. They all met in a prearranged spot, and the Germans wanted this safe passage through, but of course our people wouldn't allow that. But they were willing to discuss the exchange of prisoners, which the Germans didn't want to know about, so nothing ever came of it. And we continued to harass them on their way through. We arranged to pounce upon them, ambushes, that's the word I was looking for, when they had to go through narrow places in the mountains. Whenever we could, we got the RAF in to bomb them. On one occasion we were up on a hillside and had a fair bit of trouble from some German artillery, but nothing came particularly close, and I don't think we were ever in any great danger. When the Germans had evacuated the whole of the Balkans south of where we were, then we moved into the nearest town, which was Prelep in Macedonia. And we occupied a house there, and after that, really, it was quite plain sailing. We were still members of the mission, and we had a little group of partisans as bodyguards to look after our interests. But it shows how primitive they were. There was a flush loo in this house, and we noticed after a few days that the pipe leading from the cistern down to the back of the loo was coming loose from the wall. Not only that, but the seat of the loo was becoming fouled on the front. So we were rather mystified by this, and so we decided to keep some observation on this loo, and we found that these partisans just didn't know how to use a civilized loo. Instead of sitting on it in the normal way, they would squat on it, you see, facing the wall and holding onto the pipe, and perform in that manner. And this is this was the answer to all the troubles. So
did you explain to them how it should be?
We educated them as best we could, yes.
Did you find much difference between the partisans and the Chetniks?
Individually, no. No, they were all rather wild young men and women, basically Yugoslavs, and Chetniks and partisans, quite apart from that. In fact, our Chetnik lot achieved quite a reputation after they joined the partisans. they were thrown in at the sharp end of a number of offensives, and they did very well for themselves. After all, most of them were trained soldiers, whereas a lot of the partisans were just peasants who had a rifle thrust into their hands.
You said there was no difference between them individually, but
that's right.
Was there any difference between them collectively?
I don't think so, nothing I can put my finger on.
Was there any obvious communist character to the partisans?
Oh, yes. You were addressed always as comrade, and they always gave one another the clenched fist salute. But apart from that, you wouldn't have known that they were any different, really, from the Chetniks.
Did they have any kind of uniforms, either of them?
The partisans had the Red Star, of course, and the Chetniks had the badge of King Peter, which was a complicated thing. Did it have the double eagle in it? I think it did. Double-headed eagle, that is.
But apart from these symbols like clenched fists and red stars, was there any obvious communist character to the partisans?
I don't think so, except perhaps in the matter of discipline. There were lots of women amongst the men.
Just in the partisans?
Yes.
But not in the Chetniks?
I only remember one woman in the Chetniks, and she was the wife of one of these sergeants, Narednik. That's the Yugoslav word for sergeant. And he had the extraordinary name of Arsic.
Were you impressed by the fighting caliber of the people you were working with once they started fighting?
No.
Why not?
They were far better at avoiding a battle than they were at getting on with it. And they could never make their minds up. And no, it's so difficult for me now, you see, at this time, to separate what I knew at that time and what I know now. The long-range desert group, in their operations in Yugoslavia, had an awful lot of trouble with the partisans. The partisans were resenting them. They wanted to have everything to themselves. They wanted all the glory. And although they accepted help from the Allies, their subsequent reports showed that it was they themselves who had done it all. But while I was actually there during the war, I didn't see any of this collaboration with the Allies. We didn't see any Allied troops coming into the country at all. So all I remember is that they would think of a plan and then argue interminably about it until it was too late to do anything. And this is very largely the way they went on, I'm afraid. But of course they did get into some actions, no doubt about it, and they did stand up and fight whenever they had to. And they had a lot of casualties. I remember visiting a hospital where there were things like blood transfusions going on in the open air. The donor and the man receiving the blood lying side by side on a blanket in the woods. They had some awful things to put up with.
What did their attitude towards the Germans seem to be?
Absolute hatred.
Did they hate them just as much as the Bulgarians?
Oh, yes. Yes. They wouldn't take any prisoners unless they had to. And if they had to, I suppose that would only be because they wanted some men to do rough work, Otherwise, there just weren't any prisoners taken at all.
Did you see how German prisoners were treated?
No, I didn't see any German prisoners. But I did hear that there were one or two gangs of them doing things like road repairs.
Did you come across the Russian army in Yugoslavia?
Yes, in Skopje. When finally we moved from Prilep into Skopje, there was quite a big Russian contingent there, invited by the Yugoslavs. I didn't meet any of the officers, and the only time I met any of the private soldiers was in a restaurant. We went into this place for a drink, and there was a group of Russians having a meal at the next table. So we said, come and join us, come and have a drink. But they wanted nothing to do with us. They ate their meal as quickly as they could and pushed off. Very primitive.
In what way?
Well, in their social behaviour. If they'd been any other nationality, I imagine that they would at least have tried to communicate, but they didn't. I think they were afraid of us, afraid that we might start preaching capitalism to them or something. I really don't know what their motivation was. All I know is that they wanted nothing to do with us at all. They shied right away.
Were they other ranks or officers?
These are other ranks. Mm.
What did the attitude of the Yugoslav population towards the partisans and Chetniks respectively seem to be?
Oh, very, very helpful, and they would risk their lives for us. In fact, remember I told you that when Ron and I were on our escape, we walked into this village, which was incidentally called Belitsa. We were met by a chap who was waving his hands at us and clearly telling us not to go any further. We heard later, when we went back in 1972, that this poor chap had been shot. But in spite of things like that, it didn't shake their friendliness towards all resistance forces and all the allied people.
Did they seem to show any preference for the partisans or for the Chetniks?
No. No. While we were with the Chetniks, we had just as much cooperation from the civilian population as we did when we were with the partisans.
Did you see anything of a struggle for power between the Chetniks and the partisans at first hand?
No. It was all pretty well cut and dried by the time we arrived. You see, Tito had become so powerful that it was no use anybody opposing him by the time we came on the scene. He achieved his power, I think, by ignoring the reprisals which the Germans and Bulgars made. You see, in the early stages, when the Chetniks were fighting, and this was almost exclusively in Serbia and